There's a correlation between what parts of your brain light up and what you are trying to communicate. So if we can key into that, we can conceivably control computers with our thoughts.
Will machines be able to read your mind? This is Future Lab, the online radio show of Intel Labs. I'm Jason Lopez. Using computers to read the faint brainwaves we produce presents steep challenges, but the benefits could be profound. Using machines to monitor brain activity is actually not new at all. The first awareness of electrical activity in the brain happened in the 1800s, and by 1912, the first electroencephalographic image of brain activity was produced. The new twist in all of this lately has been the introduction of a machine brain, so to speak, also known as a computer, to interact with the human brain. Scientists want to do much more than simple lie detection. It's a monumental compute challenge in which they envision computers being able to read thoughts in the mind. Deirdre Kennedy reports.
It's hard to consider the prospect of mind-reading computers without recalling pop culture images, like when Batman's inner secrets are exposed by the Riddler's mind-reading machine.
By the way, I've seen your mind, freak. Yours is the greatest riddle of all. Can Bruce Wayne and Batman ever truly coexist?
In the film Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, a shifty scientist creates a low-tech system to map the brain's emotional memories and erase them. But don't worry, your thoughts are safe for now. Researchers are, however, teaching computers to recognize words while they're still inside the human brain. At the Center for Cognitive Brain Imaging at Carnegie Mellon University, a participant named Justin lies inside a functional MRI machine. Psychology professors Tom Mitchell and Marcel Just monitor his brain activity on a screen as he looks at a set of simple line drawings, a truck, an airplane, a hammer, and their corresponding English words.
So Justin is now being shown these word-image pairs. There are a total of 8 distinct ones, and each one is going to be shown 3 times. And that'll be the data that we'll be using. And the only information it'll have to go on is the brain image.
Now that we've collected the images from Justin's brain while he was thinking about these 8 words, we've asked the computer algorithm to look at the brain imaging data that we've collected and tell us which word was which.
Word was chisel.
My first guess is chisel.
That voice is coming from a computer interface called a classifier. The researchers then turned to another program that was trained to recognize data from different people's brain scans.
And we're going to determine whether that classifier, which has never seen data from Justin's brain before, can successfully determine which word that he's looking at.
We've asked it, was the word eye or was it closet?
I think the word is eye.
So it was correct.
It got it, based entirely on other people's brain activation.
I think the word is apartment.
Researchers say the computer is accurate 9 times out of 10. Psychologist Marcel Just, who heads the center, says the findings demonstrate that different people in the experiment had very similar brain activity when looking at the same items.
It means that all of us, to some extent, when we think of a chair or an apple or a hammer or any physical object, very similar things are happening to our brain. That was never known before. That's a result that was published for the very first time.
Researchers also found that the same region of the brain lights up in speakers of different languages who see the same image. Those findings could someday lead to a universal translation device. Mark Palatucci, a PhD student in artificial intelligence at Carnegie Mellon, who works on the brain-computer interface study, says the computers aren't actually mind-reading. What they're doing is crunching a whole lot of data to make an educated guess.
So, for example, if I think of the word glass, a glass has all sorts of different attributes, such as its weight, the fact that I can actually put something into it, how heavy it is, can I hold it in my hand. A lot of your brain activity is actually correlated with many of these sort of semantic attributes of the word itself. We basically ask the computer to make predictions about all these different attributes of the brain scan. we're then able to sort of look what words have those sort of semantic properties, and that's actually how we make our prediction.
The computer can distinguish between, say, activity for a juicy green food like an apple and a hard metal tool like a hammer, but it can't discern between concepts like walk or saunter. In fact, computers can't yet understand adjectives or verbs at all, much less whole concepts. So researchers are sticking to simple words.
We chose physical concrete nouns because those are the words we found that if we show the word multiple times, we'll see sort of a similar pattern each time. Whereas if we show more abstract words that don't have an obvious physical representation, words like, say, democracy or love, we find that the patterns of activity we see can vary dramatically, and it's much harder for us to sort of predict those abstract type words.
So far, the Carnegie Mellon team has been able to identify about 1,000 different words. One of the challenges to advancing the technology is screening out extra noise, all the other activity going on in the brain besides thinking of words and objects. Palatucci says one of the limitations is the current brain scanning technology.
We're working primarily with fMRI and MEG. Other people use something called EEG. It's trying to figure out, if you will, you know, how a car works by just sort of looking at what parts of it are hot. And there are so many neurons in the brain, but we don't really know, like at an individual level, what neurons are actually firing. We can only sort of get this very coarse look at what region of the brain is activating at any given time. So to really understand what's going on, we really need to know at a much sort of lower level, at a much higher granularity, what the neurons are actually doing.
Although still in its early days, brain-computer interface, or BCI technology, is already giving hope to people with severe handicaps from stroke, spinal injury, or degenerative conditions like Lou Gehrig's disease.
These are people who have no means of controlling any motor output.
Teresa Vaughn is a research scientist and director of BCI clinical studies at the Wadsworth Center at the New York State Department of Health. She and her colleagues have created a system that can interpret the user's brain waves through a special electrode cap. Researcher Lynn McCain.
That cap records 8 channels of EEG. It's placed on the head and then it's plugged into an amplifier, which is about the size of a cigar box. And then that information is then passed through an algorithm that extracts the particular feature that we're interested in. It further passes through an algorithm that identifies the user's intent, and then the user's intent is printed on the screen or accepted as input into the computer.
Even with predictive text, the technology is still very slow. It takes most users about 11 seconds to select the icon or function or word they want. The one user has been able to use the interface to write and win a research grant from the National Institutes of Health. Mark Palatucci, the PhD candidate in artificial intelligence and robotics at Carnegie Mellon, hopes to one day create an actual voice prosthesis that will be able to say what the user was thinking. He admits it could be a problem finding ways to prevent computers from just blurting out every thought or image that comes to the user's head, leaving them with a sort of high-tech Tourette syndrome. Which brings up the thorny question of privacy. Criminologists are already trying to figure out a way to use BCI technology to help determine guilt, but for now, we don't have to worry much about cops pointing a device at us that can tell when we're thinking about speeding.
The brain is inside your skull, and these are very faint signals.
Dean Palmerlow is a BCI researcher at Intel Labs in Pittsburgh.
I sometimes make the analogy, trying to listen to neurons is like trying to listen to a mosquito buzzing on the other side of a brick wall, because it's that faint a signal. So we need to have some rather exotic technology now. These scanners are several million dollars that we use to peer inside the brain and record electrical activity.
His long-range vision is to enable regular people to access information more seamlessly.
I'd like to tell the story that my wife asks me some obscure fact, you know, what's the capital of Czechoslovakia? I say, I know that. I don't know it off the top of my head, but I do know I can whip out my mobile device type it into a search engine and very quickly get back an answer in, you know, 5-10 seconds. But what if we could actually ask a question and receive a response without any externally visible indication that we are actually tapping into the global knowledge base? At that point, it's as good as having, you know, natively the world's encyclopedia, all of Wikipedia, all of the information that's online at the tips of my neurons. And it would really change what it means to be a person, I think.
It would definitely take the fun out of playing Trivial Pursuit. Pomerleau and other researchers are not unaware of the privacy concerns. He says developers need to take into account exactly what it is that people will want to do or how they will want to interact with their computers and whether the technology will be something they'll accept or resist. For Future Lab, I'm Deirdre Kennedy.
That's our show for today. Future Lab is the online radio show of Intel Labs. You can find photos at Flickr. Just use the search terms Future Lab and Intel. Other Future Lab episodes are on iTunes and at connectedsocialmedia.com. Intel Labs is at intel.com/research.